360. You know what I'd be interested in seeing? A parody of 50 Shades of Grey written and directed by John Waters. He, of course, has been the campy, good-natured master of filthy cinema since 1972, when he released his truly shocking comedy, Pink Flamingos.
Oh, my God, almighty! Someone has sent me a bowel movement!
A turd, Mama, a turd!
You're gonna stab them!
But by the late 1980s and 1990s, the mainstream was flowing more in his direction and vice versa, and he was making studio movies like Serial Mom.
I hate Mrs. Ackerman.
I hate her too.
You know, somebody ought to kill her.
Yeah.
For the sake of this planet, somebody just might.
And his old movie Hairspray then became a huge hit Broadway musical, which was then readapted for the screen by Disney. For 25 years, John Waters has also been creating art based on still photographs, an exhibit of which was shown at the New Museum in New York in the early 2000s. When he dropped by Studio 360 back then, I asked him if there was a moment in his childhood when he first knew that he wanted to make movies.
Well, I think I was an outsider first. I didn't have much choice about that. I remember, you know how kids sit at the top of the steps and listen to their parents talk, and I heard my mother say, "He's just an odd duck." And I thought, oh, that's it. Okay, great. Now I know, you know, that's my job in life, to be an odd duck. So I tried to fulfill that.
That wasn't a horrible moment when you heard your mother say that?
No, not at all. I was glad she recognized it, because I never was interested in what the other kids were interested in, but it didn't bother me, really. I mean, I wasn't hassled in school, really, because they thought I was nuts. If they think you're nuts, it's a great protection in a way.
Because they were scared of you a little bit?
A little bit scared. And if you can make them laugh. You see, I was always against authority, though. So the bullies didn't want to beat me up because I could say rude things.
And were you a big watcher of television and a patron of the movie theater? Did you soak in that media culture?
Very much so. I was on the Howdy Doody show and personally saw Clarabelle up person, which I've never gotten over, the psychotic clown squirting people with seltzer water, and Flubadub's great fashion sense. I never got over Howdy Doody. I'm here today because of the Howdy Doody
show. So I may have seen you as a little boy watching Howdy Doody from Omaha. I may have seen you in the audience.
You might have.
And was that must have been an exciting moment to see real national television being made for you.
I think to many of the kids, it was very much of a disillusion because you came in and you saw there was this tiny little stage. There were four Howdy Doody puppets. It was a completely fake, but that was a great, great, wonderful thing to me that I realized it's all a lie and I want to be involved in this. I want to be in this magic trick. This is sort of what I want to do forever. So I became a puppeteer for children's birthday parties and had quite a career when I was 12 years old.
What were your puppet characters like?
Well, they were Punch and Judy because I could have violence and a Cinderella. I had the two things, but at the end I would come out with it was hand puppets, not string puppets. And I would come out with the dragon puppet and say, which is violating all puppeteers that come out beyond the stage when the kids see you. And I'd say that if the puppet bit your hand, you'd have good luck. Well, a third of the kids would start crying and flipping out, and the other ones loved it. And that's still what I do.
So you were sort of a postmodern puppeteer of some
well,
kind.
Well, I certainly wouldn't have used those words at the time. Yeah, I tried to have some showmanship in my shows. I was
a lot of the characters in your films are from variously fringy corners of society, despised and otherwise. But again and again, even in your earliest movies, you sort of get audiences to love them despite their outsider status. In Pink Flamingos, I think of you make this hero out of a 350-pound transvestite. In fact, let's listen to Divine from that film vowing to be the filthiest person alive, which is one of her ambitions.
Happy birthday, fatso! You are no longer the filthiest person alive. We are. Signed, the filthiest people alive.
Oh, just as I thought. And a deliberate attempt to seize my title. These are obviously jealous people. Jealous of our careers, of all of our press. Why else would they sign that, the filthiest people alive? Everyone knows that that title has become my trademark. Why, to use it in this way is only to insinuate that they are filthier than I. How could anyone seriously believe that? How could anyone be filthier than Divine?
Again, that was the late Divine. What was lovable about that character?
Well, this Pink Flamingos was certainly made at the end of the hippie years, and it was made in the year Deep Throat came out. It was in the year that pornography became legal. So we tried to think what, in a way, could be a humorous movie that could shock hippies that thought they had seen everything, because that was my midnight audience, certainly. So it wasn't illegal, the things that we had. The ending of Pink Flamingos, the most notorious thing, where Divine eats dog do. But it enraged people because there wasn't a law against it yet. There may be today because of that movie. So we were trying to get people to laugh at their ability to still be shocked by anything in 1972.
And of course, the ability to be shocked, which art for at least 100 years, probably more, has been one of its driving forces. That's pretty hard to shock people in 2004, is it not?
Well, I don't try to shock people. I try to make people laugh. I'm shocked every time I go to a bad movie about how sentimental it is, or how stupid it is, or how obvious it is, or how it's been written by 20 writers as if a computer and producers wrote it. I'm shocked all the time at the movies, but not in a good way.
As your characters, your film characters, became over time, as one looks back, less outrageous, less about giant transvestites eating dog do.
Can I say a little something? You talked about Serial Mom, a later movie. That's where I asked the audience to root for a serial killer. So I'm not completely sure. My last movie was Cecil B. DeMille, about film terrorists, and my new one's about sex addicts. So I'm not so sure I'm doing anything different. I think the public has changed. And I never tried to top Pink Flamingos. I knew that I won the Imperial Margarine Crown of Filth. And the only person that successfully challenged me was Johnny Knoxville, and he did it wonderfully. And he's the star of my new movie.
He did Jackass on MTV.
Yeah.
And so you were a big fan of that program?
Very much so, yes. Its grossness and its greatness will never be forgotten.
Was the film Hairspray a turning point for you? Because it was, certainly by comparison to your movies, pretty warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, I remember I got the PG rating. I hung my head in shame and thought I'd never work again. I didn't try to do that. I was amazed, because at the time, it's hard to think of it now, but I was nervous. He was a white man making a satire about civil rights. That's not politically correct.
But this chubby girl, who certainly is an outsider and is embraced by 1960 Baltimore society.
Yeah, but it was also pro black and white couples in teenage years, a black guy and a white girl. I mean, there were things that now nobody thinks about, but then I didn't know. I didn't try to make a family thing. It did. And that was the perverseness of it, that families were watching Divine now and not caring that it was a man dressed as a woman, and a woman that no drag queen would ever allow himself to look like.
You have, as I mentioned at the beginning, an exhibit of your work opening at the New Museum, a further embrace of by the establishment of John Waters. Tell me about the show.
Well, it's called Change of Life, which was Marvin Heifman, the curator, is a great title, I think, since I've been involved in the art world for, always as a collector, but certainly for the last, since about 1990, started taking these pictures off the TV screen for myself about stills, to create stills from movies that there was no such still. It went from that to taking images from different movies and putting them, like in storyboards, into a new narrative to tell a new movie with other people's images, which is what I'm doing. Anybody can take pictures off the TV screen, but this really is about editing and writing. And humor, certainly, putting it together. So that's how it all began.
But there also, from the look of the work, which I've only seen in the catalog, are really beautiful, you know, montages. And I mean, one expects a lot from John Waters' work, but not necessarily beauty in some conventional sense.
Well, beauty is a word that, you know, I did a piece called Julia, that it's a shot of Julia Roberts and a shot of Mr. Sardonicus, you know, with a strange mouth. And I got the idea because I read in an interview with Julia Roberts, she said, I look at a picture of myself, I don't think I'm beautiful. It looks like I have a coat hanger in my mouth. And if you look at a picture, Julia Roberts would not have been thought of as beautiful in the 20s or 30s. And you look at a picture of Greta Garbo today, kids don't understand why people thought she was beautiful. What is beautiful always changes. I thought Divine was beautiful. I thought beauty to me is confidence, and having confidence in style. smile. You can be ugly and be beautiful. Certainly, it's about how you pull it off. You just have to exaggerate your shortcomings, and it can become a style. You have to believe in yourself. If you think you're sexy, somebody else will.
Your exhibit at the New Museum also includes films of yours that have really never been seen.
Well, because they're being shown in an art context, kind of like it's video art in a room. These are the earliest films I made that have only been shown once at a beatnik coffee house in Baltimore or in a church basement, which where we went so the censors wouldn't come to us. Now, you can look at these films today. They would never be censored. But certainly you can see, I lived in my parents' house. They were filmed to my bedroom. Divine is in them. Mary Vivian Pierce, Mink Stole, when we were teenagers. But you can see that some of the very ideas that I still use today were in these films. The Catholicism stuff, the borrowing, the appropriation of other images. It's always been something that I have used. In one of them, Eat Your Makeup, we have the whole Kennedy assassination where Divine plays Jackie, the reenactment, and it was 2 years after it really happened. So people really didn't think it was funny, and they called this one festival called the, not even the police, they went worse, they called the Internal Revenue, so I couldn't charge admission in the church. That's a new kind of censorship, isn't it? That's ruder than calling the police.
Very interestingly effectual kind of censorship.
Yes, it was. We passed the basket, though.
It's interesting to think about how, in cultural terms, it seems as though in the last 40 years has been a march of the gay sensibility into the mainstream, which I guess has been a good thing for you to the degree that your work has been an expression of a kind of perverse gay sensibility?
Yeah, but I think I'm gayly incorrect. And I always said I was gay. Nobody made a big deal of it because they were afraid that the answer to my sexuality was somehow worse than gay. So the press steered away from that because they were always afraid of the answer.
Though,
well, in their minds, who knows? They thought maybe I was a necrophilic. God knows what they thought. You know, I'm sorry to disappoint. I'm not. But certainly, to me, gay is not enough either. I think progress is admitting there's bad gay films, too. But certainly, at the same time, the gay audience has been there from the very beginning. But my gay audience doesn't like gay culture. They make fun of it. So my audience from the beginning were the gay outsiders that didn't fit in the gay culture.
So double outsiders,
yeah.
In a sense. It's interesting, in all that we're talking about today, how so often what is outside in our culture, maybe in all cultures, becomes sort of eventually embraced by the mainstream. And you think of a category that is so widely used as a piece of nomenclature today, alternative. It's sort of turning the outsider into this permanent establishment category as a way to sell stuff.
Well, it already is. I mean, when I started out, we used the negative reviews for my films and the ad campaigns. Pink Flamingos, the entire campaign was negative reviews. But it was the kind of negative reviews no critic would write today because all critics are hip. None of them would say, this is disgusting, this should be censored, that kind of thing. That's impossible today to do that because then it was us versus them and there was a cultural war. We won, and all the people that were them are now them, the critics. So you can't do that anymore. No one's going to rise to that bait.
I wonder if it's the same, the way that the outsiders become the academy that happened 130 years ago with the Impressionists, that suddenly they were the outsiders, and 30 years later they were running the show.
Of course, it's always like that, you know. And then the new kids that come along that think of things to offend the people, the generation before them that just had success. That's the new thing. That's youth's duty, to offend the generation before them, just when they feel comfortable that they've changed things.
John Waters, thanks a lot for joining me today in Studio 360.
Thanks for having me.
I spoke with John Waters in 2004. Another exhibit devoted to his art and movies will be on display in his hometown at the Baltimore Museum of Art this fall. You can find out more about that at studio360.org.